Hi, and welcome to the Passionistas Project podcast. We're Amy and Nancy Harrington. If you enjoy listening to the show, please consider becoming a patron. Just a small donation of $1 a month can help us keep the project going, and you'll get rewards like buttons, access to premium content, and invites to Passionistas Project events. Today, we're talking to Ramona Harvey. Ramona left the field of consumer research to focus on helping people find their unique path and their true purpose in life. And she's designed a workshop to help people navigate the path of happiness. So please welcome to the show, Ramona Harvey.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to talk to you guys.
We're so glad to have you here. What are you most passionate about?
I am really passionate about happiness and just sort of doing my part in being a catalyst in some way to help people get on this path that I call path of happiness, which is nothing more than connecting with who they are and what they really want to do in life.
How do you translate that into what you do for a living?
I'm in a transition right now, and I am myself pursuing this path of happiness that I have designed based on 4 years of research. And what I've done is sort of begin to practice what I preach and start to make those changes in my own life that I've been talking to people about making in their life. About 4 years ago, when I had a lot of questions about kind of that midlife crisis, you know, and I turned 40 and I started thinking about who I am and what do I want to do and what's this life about then. I had the pressing question that I heard other people really talk about, and it's something that I've talked to a lot of my friends and colleagues, which is, you know, can you be happy while also being a responsible adult and having a normal life? You know, I'm a parent. I'm also primarily the breadwinner here in San Francisco. My husband's an artist. He works at museums, and it just so happens that my career in business had paid so much more. And so really, I had to shoulder a lot of the financial responsibility in the family. So I found myself back then in this point where so many people I've talked to since then find themselves, which is, you know, how can you sort of be happy? How do you figure out what makes you happy while at the same time having a life that requires so much refocusing towards financial solvency and just kind of doing things that pay rather than doing things that maybe deep down you would rather do? And so really, I would say my journey, it started back then. It started with these big, big questions. You know, the midlife crisis is one of those things that a lot of people experience. And at that point, I started working towards figuring out what is my path? What can I do? Even from the perspective of the situation that I found myself, that really seemed that there was no light at the end of the tunnel. I just started thinking about, you know what, I'm going to do this. I developed what I call Path of Happiness framework, where I basically threw in all the things that I've learned from 4 years of research and interviewing people. And I started to do workshops on that, and I'm writing a book.
Tell us about the significant change you and your family made in 2014 and what you learned from that experience.
So about 4 years ago, and this is something that we thought for a long time, we kind of decided to quit our jobs. And we took off for a year with my family. So we have two kids. They were ages 6 and 10, two girls. And we took them out of school. And we did the thing that, you know, it was just a wild idea for a few years. And then when I started talking to people, it kind of seemed like this idea has legs. And I found some people out there that other people pointed me to, other people's stories, and just all of a sudden seemed like, hey, this is not wild. This is something that other people do. So we took off with our family for a year, and we went back to Romania, where I'm from. We traveled to a lot of countries, I think 11 countries, and my kids got to, you know, really practice Romanian. I got to really start to do this work of who I am and what am I here to do? And, you know, who am I even? And that was sort of a big question, given that I was back in Romania, which I, you know, my homeland, which I had left right after college. So there was a lot of sort of traveling in the real world and traveling internally into my own inner world. And that's just something that I really haven't done before that. So we did that, and that was just an unbelievable experience. And and then pretty much my life started to change a little bit, little by little, since then.
So what did you learn doing that, that you applied to your life when you got back?
One of the first things that I learned was that I really didn't know myself. And it seems like a blanket statement, but I mean, if you had asked me before I left if that was going to be one of the things that I would learn, I would have laughed. I would have said, that's just woo-woo stuff. Like, of course I know my stuff. Like, I'm strong. I'm this, like, powerful woman. I know how to set goals. I know how to work hard. But I think when you travel, and especially when you go home, you know, back where you're from, especially for someone like me, you know, when you leave your country and you kind of build a life somewhere else, and that could be in other ways. I'm sure everyone's experiencing this, whether or not you leave physically your home. We do all kind of go in different directions and career-wise and so on. And so when you go back and you kind of put yourself back to where you come from, it sort of forces you to remember and get in touch with kind of who you were as a child, which is something that I absolutely never did. And I didn't even think that there was any point in doing that. So one of the first things that I learned was, oh my God, this is where I'm from. I don't speak my native language on a daily basis. I'm not exposed to the culture or the customs of those where I grew up. And so just putting myself physically back there, I just started to really kind of open my eyes as to kind of my background and where I'm from and the traditions and the neighborhood and the physicality, but the culture of it and the mindsets that people have and just the ways of being, just everything sort of brought back memories. And so I started seeing that. Not only have I put a lid on my childhood, I never really thought there was any value in thinking about it other than maybe once in a while telling stories to my kids, but also kind of reflecting on the impact of the place that I'm from. I think that was one of the most powerful things, was just kind of actually opening up my eyes and just seeing that, you know, hey, I had this overblown image of who I am. And I always thought, oh, I know my purpose and I know who I am. But actually, when I kind of had a year to think about things and be removed from this world and be removed from the surroundings and the influence of the corporate environment, of friends and neighbors, and just all of that kind of opened my eyes and my heart in a big way.
Tell us a little bit about your happiness research.
We always dream about kind of taking off and doing something massive or big change. And then at some point you come back. Coming back was actually pretty difficult, getting back and just seeing that, wow, I've learned all these things about myself. Now what? So that was kind of I would say equally painful, actually probably more painful than even before we left in our journey. I think that in itself was an obstacle that I didn't expect. One of the first things that I did was, I want to understand this thing. If going away for a year didn't do it, then I didn't change. If anything, now looking back, I realized it actually opened up a can of worms and I was more raw than I've ever been. I'm like, what is it then? Like, I thought I'm going to be happy, like connecting with my kids, connecting where I'm from. I mean, seriously, what else is there? Like, if I'm not happier than I was before, then I really need to figure this thing out. So because I'm a researcher, I thought, well, I'm going to do what I know how to do. So I just started thinking up a research plan and I started calling up people and scheduled interviews with people doing qualitative research, ethnography research, something I knew how to do. And I'm like, I'm just going to invite 25 people. I'm going to do research. I'm going to write about it, publish an article, and boom. And then I've done it. And then I can move on. So that opened up another can of worms, that I was essentially moving along my own journey of discovery. So I started talking to people, started interviewing people. And really, one of the first questions that I had was, I had come across this quote long time ago, back in high school, I think. And there was a quote that Leo Tolstoy starts his Anna Karenina book by saying, happy people are all alike, and every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. So I'm paraphrasing. So I thought, well, is it true that everyone who's happy is happy in the same way? And is it true that all unhappy people are unhappy in different ways? So that's kind of the beginning. It was just one of those things that, I don't know, for some reason, just nagged me. The other question that I had was, well, everyone I see around me and the corporation I was working at, and for all my 20 years of corporate experience, everyone complains. No one's ever happy. That story was consistent. So I thought, how come everyone in this world right here, you know, we're all super smart. How is it that all of us here, over here, all the world that I really knew, we're all sort of not satisfied? And more than that, so many of the people I've talked to were just hopeless. And not thinking of themselves as hopeless, but more like, this is just how it is. I mean, what do you expect? You know, this is work, and there is happiness, and there is passion, and then there is work that pays. So to me, it didn't make sense. And I understood that kind of, I guess, is the way things are. But I just refuse to just accept that for my life. Because, you know, when you have younger kids and you talk about, you read them stories and you talk about you can be anything you want to be. And then here I am stressed out and frustrated every day. So it just doesn't add up. Deep down, I just felt like there is this huge disconnect. And so what I started doing is I interviewed people from my old world, people very similar to me who were just not satisfied. And then I'm like, well, who are the people I know who are happy? Because I want to compare and contrast. So I started interviewing people who had more creative jobs. I started thinking, like, who do I know who's happy? I think we all have a pretty good internal radar. I mean, I think it's pretty clear, you know, you can see from just the way people act and behave and what they do with their lives, you can really see people who are more satisfied and kind of seem to love their life and pretty clear who doesn't. So I started interviewing one by one people from both groups. And so that's how it started. And I was pretty blown away, actually, from probably the fourth interview. When I started to go into things like what makes you happy, what do you do, what are the kind of things that you do, tell me a little bit about your life, all that kind of stuff. So I had this discussion guide, so essentially asked people the same exact questions. And so then I started comparing the two, and I just thought by comparing these two, I'm just going to get some ideas. I mean, I found out a lot of the things that I had expected. One of the things was that, well, yeah, seems like creative people are happier than corporate people. So it was a very basic idea. I obviously was scratching the surface, but I started there. And as I got into the interviews, some things that I didn't expect had come up. So one of the things that as I reflected later and started reading a lot at the same time to put these new findings into context, I started reading positive psychology and philosophy and poetry, all sorts of things. What I started to realize, and this was probably the biggest aha for me, was that there isn't really such thing as happy and unhappy. I was pretty convinced that that's kind of how it is. What I started to see is actually that there is this journey that people in the group that rated themselves as happier seem to have gone through this journey. Overcoming things, working hard, getting back, sticking with their vision, etc. Being optimistic, like really being badass basically about their own convictions and really knowing themselves. But it seemed that a lot of the things that these people were doing at the beginning of this journey were things that the people in the first category, like me, were people who were doing those exact same things, only they didn't make it as far on this journey, if you will, as the second group. And this gave me a lot of hope for me personally. I thought, okay, so if there isn't such thing as some people are happy, some people are unhappy, it's really more about a sort of a journey. Like I want to get from here to New York. Some people actually are farther, not that they're any better than me. It's just that they happen to know that they're going to New York, they got their ticket, and they actually are now on their way. For me, I'm still thinking, where am I going? Am I going to New York or am I going somewhere else? Am I going to get this ticket? I don't know. It's expensive. You know, so we are just simply sort of not sure yet, you know, where we're going to go. Because, I mean, if I want to go somewhere, I have a laundry list of 25 places I want to go. So, of course, there are all these things that I like to do, but which one am I going to choose? And I remember a talk by Elizabeth Gilbert, who talked about this idea that some people are very, very clear. You know, they're just blessed with having a quote-unquote talent or interest or thing that they're really, really passionate about that they identified at a very young age. And I see this with my own kids. And then there are people who are more generalists. She calls them hummingbirds, people who like to go from leaf to leaf, people who are interested in this, in this, in this, in this. So I found myself in this category. So if you are in that category, what in the world are you going to do? And let alone the fact that you have to support yourself and you have to be a responsible parent and pay your mortgage and all of that. So how do you behave in the world if you are in this position where you find yourself at age 40 something, you're used to an income and you have kids to raise, and now you don't even know where you're going to go, where there's this other group of people who already have done that. So that was kind of one of the first ahas for me, is that, whoa, okay. So it's not that I don't have the possibility to be happy and really fully bloom as a person. It's just that I really haven't done these things yet. And, you know, just to put a pause here, one of the things that I've learned through my research is this idea, and this is one of the key things on this path of happiness journey, is this idea of full honesty and acceptance and self-compassion. And I think you need these things in order to not look at yourself in the mirror and be like, I'm just terrible. Like, just forget it. This is hopeless. Like, I'm done. I'm just not like those people. Okay, let's just accept that. So I think the tendency is to just kind of look at where we are, be dissatisfied, and just close the door and be like, that's it. Okay, so I am unhappy. And this thing over here is just not within reach, not for me. I have to support my family. I have student loans. So all these things are there, and they are there for, I'm not going to say for a reason, but they're things that they can teach me something about what's important to me, what I care about. And by thinking this way, if you start to really look at yourself and what's important to you, I think clarity of, hey, I want to go to New York, is when it happens. And I think without that investment in look in time and patience and really wanting to learn who you are and what's important to you, I don't think that, you know, you can really kind of move along this journey. I think you really just need to figure out that you do want to go in this place, and why do you want to go there? It's almost as if we have this self-judge in us who is watching, and research shows this, that we tell ourselves stories about ourselves, about who we are, and we do a really good job in convincing ourselves about a certain story. And that story is not necessarily that a story that we came up with. It's a story that has been sort of told to us, and we begin to see ourselves in the way that other people sort of had taught us to see ourselves. And so, you know, it's hard to really kind of figure out where you want to go unless you kind of actually go to the next step on this journey of learning about what are even these things that are constricting my vision? Like, what are these conditioning that I have? And how do I identify these things? And then taking those away and then open up the doors to actually see, like, what's actually me. And it was pretty surprising to do this work with myself. There are a lot of tools, and I just always thought, hey, all the knowledge I ever need is in me. All the wisdom that I need in the world is in me. And this is something that I had heard about and read about. But I think to really reach that wisdom, I think you just have to do some work. It's just like, if I want to have good abs and I want to look good and fit into my Christmas dress, like, I actually need to do work. And it won't be just work that I do right before. I need to actually do this consistent work to get to where I want to be. And I don't think we can do that if we just are forceful. And if we're like, it's this or nothing, I'm this or I'm good or I'm bad. And really, usually we have a negative story that we tell ourselves.
What are some of the tools that you've learned along the way that you think are important, and how are you either applying those to your path of happiness, or what have you come up with on your own that you're applying to the path of happiness?
In the workshop that I've organized, one of the first things that I do is I kind of take a pause and really ask people to think about what is happiness to them. And this is almost a tricky question, because happiness is, as I found out later after researching this a lot, it has so many, there's so many different angles to take when you answer that question. When I started reading about this, I just saw how complex this concept is. And it really made sense to me when I realized this, why it's been so hard for me to figure this out, and why really so many people say, well, I'm doing this. I have this corporate job. I'm married to the man of my dreams. I have amazing kids. I have a house. I have achieved success. Why am I not happy? So I realized how complex this is. And one thing, one quote that really resonated with me personally that made a lot of sense, it almost is a starting point that kind of illuminates all the different tools, if you will, and all the different angles that we have to look at, is this quote by Mahatma Gandhi, who said, happiness is when what you think, what you say, and what you do are in harmony. It's a very simple thing. And it really, if you think about it, it implies a lot. What do you think? I mean, there's a lot of negative chatter. I mean, we are basically designed to distract ourselves. Our mind is very busy and pays attention to every single thought that comes through. What we say is often conditioned by the way we're supposed to talk. And what little can we, from what we think, can we actually say? And worse, what do we actually say to ourselves? And what we do is often not necessarily defined by something that is fulfilling to us, but it's something for many of us that we have to do, that we feel we have to do. So when you kind of take all those three things, then you realize the different areas that you kind of have to really reflect on for you as a person to begin to kind of get a lay of the land of what happiness is for you. So it's about becoming a little bit aware, and little by little, we become more and more aware as we practice this of what we actually think. And then there's the courage and honesty to say. I think before we even do something, there's a saying of it. There is the acknowledging that, hey, you know what? There's this thing that I've been thinking about and I'm actually taking it seriously. You know, this idea of going away for a year. I mean, come on, who does that? I mean, that's just crazy. Everyone thinks about it, but no one does it. In fact, this is exactly what so many people told me. So I think it's the saying. It then becomes an intention. It becomes almost respecting your own thinking and respecting your own ideas and desires. And then it's the doing. So I start with that. You know, I mean, it's a really big thing, but I think it's kind of opening up the universe of what happiness really is for each of us. And then there's another quote that kind of really helped me. And it's just, I love this quote more than any other quote. And it's a quote that I read when I discovered Joseph Campbell. He's an anthropologist from the 70s. And he wrote a book called A Hero with 1,000 Faces. And I was very much inspired by that book, probably more than any other book that I came across. And the quote is, the privilege of a lifetime is being who you are. It's again, it's very simple. But to me, it explained why is this important? Why is it important to do these things of putting harmony between the things that you feel, that you think, that you say, and that you do? Well, it's important because it's a privilege. And I also personally think, as a responsible adult, that it's actually also a responsibility to be who you are. When you do that, you are indeed happier. And I think it's contagious. I think it allows other people then to be who they are. It's sort of almost each of us to come out of the closet of who we are inside and realizing that it's also a privilege because really many people don't do it.
What do you feel like has been the most rewarding part of taking this journey?
I really opened my horizons. I'm fascinated with research and I'm very whimsical, equally spiritual, which is something I've opened up to in this journey, actually. What I found is that, and again, research science shows this also, which is always fun to see. Oh, it's fun that facts are actually proving something that we've already knew. I knew that all along. I'm glad that you were able to prove that scientifically because it's hard to prove so many things we feel scientifically. But it does show, you know, science does show that we actually open up. So when we are happier, psychologists in the field of positive psychology are finding that people who do these exercises, even simple exercises, mantras, the simplest thing, it's scientifically proven that we actually are more creative. So the more positive we are, the more creative we are. I mean, to me, that's actually earth-shaking. To realize that. Because what that means is if I can nurture myself and be happier, let's just use that term, I'm actually more creative. So it's kind of like a chicken and the egg, thinking about the people who have done this work, who have gone so far on this journey of being happy and seeing that they're so creative and nothing really seems to stop them. Like the same situation would probably stop people on their tracks and be like, this is crazy. Like, let's be practical here. Can you just take this other more practical road? It seems like these people just think that they're like creative solutions. I mean, it's just any situation has, you know, a lot of different possibilities. There isn't just this one. There are creative solutions that they are able to find in real tough situations to continue on this journey and like stick to their guns about composing music or being a doctor or whatever they want to do in this world. I think for me, it's really opened me personally, despite my own mindsets. It really opened me up to this possibility of, first of all, connecting with who I am and my deeper and my bigger self, having the optimism that I could actually change things, and having sort of this creativity of seeing bigger, better, and not even bigger, better, because in a sense, they're not necessarily bigger in some ways, but they are bigger in the sense of doing something that fills me up, that I'm doing my life's work. And I really simply define that as being enthusiastic about what I do, like just being happy, being excited about what I do in every moment. And that's really honestly how I think of our life's purpose, is just doing that. And for me, I found this overwhelming. And a lot of people I talk to find this very overwhelming, because we really think about kind of making big changes. And just the moment we think of them, they're so big that we're just like, oh, forget it. This is just so much work. Just forget it. Okay, no one's doing that. Like, this is crazy. Can we just not even bother? It's just, it's a nice idea. But I think if you open yourself up and you kind of practice this positive thinking, and I can talk more about what that is, because it's not forceful positive thinking. It's also a lot of introspection and accepting the negative thoughts, and not only accepting, but actually paying attention to what they have to say, because they have some important lessons and important things that we're not paying attention to. But essentially opening up to ideas and opening up to what might be possible.
Do you have a mantra that you live by?
The main one is the privilege in this life is to be who you are. I also think of it as a responsibility, but I think it is a privilege to be here. I think it is a gift to have the awareness that we have. And I think it's a gift that we should accept, and taking that seriously, but also don't take yourself too seriously. I think that openness is really achieved by not being too stuck or decided that this way that I believe right now is the way. I think being open to discovering more of yourself, discovering more things that you might like. I mean, we know that physically every 7 years, our cells are completely changed and renewed. So we actually do change, and there are these seasons in our lives. And I think just being open to the bigger and bigger layers of who we are. And I think that is the privilege.
You talked about the thought of giving up in the past. What makes you keep going in those times?
There's this time that I've spent that I've already kind of opened up. It's something that I felt that I cannot unfeel. There's the rational mind that really needs to be dealt with. So there is also the convincing myself. There is an observing self that is observing what we do and that judges us. And when I say by judging, I don't mean positively, unfortunately. We're kind of actually harsher than other people, which is why a lot of the times when we steer and pivot in a different direction, we kind of have what's called the imposter syndrome. It's because we like could convince maybe other people, but we know deep down that we haven't done the work. I think we have this sense of like, prove it to me. I think that's where the sense of self-confidence comes and self-drive comes from that. When we become more aware of that voice and the way we judge ourselves, then I think we realize that, you know what, we have to do these steps. So if I see myself, and a big value for me is being honest and acting on my values, then I really, for me to kind of keep staying happy or thinking of myself as someone who I respect and I'm proud of, I need to actually do these things. So I'm aware of this judge in me that is observing what I'm doing. So I can't just say one thing, write one thing, and then do another thing. So I think it's kind of this old notion, I think, of being self-accountable. Now that I know what I want to do with my life, it's very difficult, actually, the place I find myself right now. I have recruiters calling me. I've been a freelancer since I got back from that trip for the last 3 years, and I could make a lot more money, and I could be a lot more stable, and I would have far fewer worries about my family, and, you know, I could be doing these things that, like, my old conditioning would dictate that I do. I would invest, I would keep going, I could probably, I would keep going, and despite myself, I would probably have some career success, but I can't do that anymore if I want to be honest, and if I want to stick with something that I've discovered and that I've already made progress on. So I think one of the first things to stay on this journey is actually to have one small win, one small thing, one little thing that sort of, as you drive your plane, you just like kind of just slightly take in a different direction. And that small win could be something like, you know, like in my case, I guess being able to convince myself, being able to convince some of my friends that going to Romania for a year is a good idea. And having one friend who said, you know what, you should just do it. just do it. What the heck do you have to lose? You're going to come back right to the same place. So I think just kind of having the smallest win, and this is something that I've learned from just working with corporations, is like, you know, they have huge goals and then they're like, hey, if we can just do this little thing and this little thing. So if you can kind of imagine a progression and maybe taking that one little step, even if it could be, like I said, just acknowledging something that you really want to do and not belittling yourself. You know, I mean, you have that idea for a reason, and you might have many ideas and you might not do all of that. But, you know, I think just even allowing yourself the time of day to actually dream a little bit and speaking it and maybe starting to do a little thing. So in my case, the thing that I realized I really wanted to do was to understand happiness, to talk about, encourage people. Hey, if I can do this, I mean, anyone can do it. I mean, I have so many things against me. And there is one other thing that helped me, is that my only sister passed away in a car crash a few years ago. And I was talking to her. She's very close to me. She's in Romania. We were talking every week. And so when she passed, that was something that, for me, the way that translated after I went through this kind of dark period, as you can imagine, the feeling and the thought that kept coming back to me was, you're here. She's not. You're here. So what are you going to do with this thing? I mean, you are here. Can we just forget about this nonsense, about the practicality? Okay, you're not going to bankrupt your family. You're not going to starve yourself. But you've been talking a lot about this thing. And if there's the lingering thought in your head, in your heart, that thing you need to pay attention to. And, you know, I think by simply being here, I think that's enough reason to pay attention to it and maybe start taking it seriously. If you look at all the people that you admire, take one person, they've done this. They had this dream. It wasn't an easy thing. They had to overcome lots of roadblocks, lots of self-doubt, lots of fear, lots of conditioning, just like me, just like anyone. People who we admire the most have gone through this. And for me, thinking about my sister helped me also. One other thing that is helping me is kind of putting my intention out there, because I just am so scattered that I could be doing a million things. And I am so practical that I could easily take this full-time job. But I think by putting myself out there, and thanks to social media, as bad as it is in some ways, but it's really helped me be accountable and put my most sparkly thoughts out there and being like, okay, there's no turning back. Like, you thought this, okay? So you say something, you put it out there. Obviously, this works for me. There is a lot of conventional wisdom that actually says the opposite. Don't put anything out there until you're ready to commit. For me, it's worked the opposite. I think it's little by little. It's sort of, again, convincing the judge in me that this is something that's important to me. So it's building up on my case that this is an important thing. And I think by regularly writing, or whatever it is, in my case, writing is the thing that I'm passionate about. By writing, by actually doing this thing, even though I'm not getting paid for at this point, I'm actually doing it. So that's something I can control. And I think that act is, again, helping me on this journey, because I'm convincing myself this is important and I'm doing this, whether or not I get paid or someone thinks it's good. Because that's not something that is part of my journey. That's not something that I can do. You know, I don't know what the weather will be like in New York, but I'm getting my ticket.
Thanks for listening to the Passionistas Project podcast and our interview with Ramona Harvey. Visit sfstoryteller.com to learn more about Ramona and her Path of Happiness workshop. And be sure to subscribe to the Passionistas Project podcast so you don't miss any of our upcoming inspiring guests.